And that means it's time for Spectrum West at 5:06. Hi, everybody. Happy January 11th to you and yours. I'm Al Ross. This is Spectrum West, the arts, the culture, and humanities of Western Wisconsin. We try to touch it all. Today, music, reading to young people, and dinner theater is on our minds. Jim Oliver welcomes Wayne Merrick from the Eau Claire Children's Theater with all we need to know about their version of interactive dinner theater and all else ECCT, Eau Claire Children's Theater. The Langby Clan, better known when they add a friend as the Barnyard Banshees, likes to make music, and they make it for those who listen and dance at functions and venues all over Wisconsin. They'll do just that tomorrow night at the Heidi Center. We'll meet the dad and husband directly and the others indirectly, plus hear the sound of the Banshees from their self-titled CD. Young people's book specialist Rob Reed returns. He has a new book out that lists many of the best silly books to read aloud. We'll chat about the value of reading to others. And to jumpstart this radio rally today, it's been a while since we last spoke with West Wisconsin native turned big city singer-songwriter Vicki Emerson. So it's time we catch up, especially since she's in the process of releasing a new CD. Well, some of this is going to sound kind of like, I think, a holiday letter stuffed inside a Christmas card. But, you know, you do have a lot of news to share, so let's begin. One of the topics we discussed in the past was the presence of a child in your midst, and now that is about to become a plural term, as in children. It appears as if building a family is similar to when Vicki Emerson decides to do a CD. It's time. Let's do it. The multi-level reference was intended there. And you're making it happen. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I'm due with number 2 in March.
And so number 1 is how old?
She just turned 2.
Is it terrible?
Oh, some days. There's a reason why it's called the Terrible Twos, and we now know why.
And next up on your holiday letter, even though we're past the holidays, I didn't get your card, by the way, so this is...
Oh, I didn't do any, Al, so it wasn't you. Nobody got one.
Okay. Next, your family building is taking place in different surroundings than when we last spoke. You have inched yourself closer to your roots. Tell us about that.
Yes. It was sometime in August, September, we found out we were going to move to from San Francisco to Minneapolis. Uh-huh. We made that decision. It wasn't one that was an easy one to make. My husband's job changed, and we had the option to stay in San Francisco, move back to New York, which, of course, Al, you know, I love New York, and
yes.
Then or move back home. And we decided that we were raised here, and this is a great place to raise a family, and all our family is here, and we decided it was time to move back.
So your husband's from around here.
Yeah, he grew up in St. Paul.
Okay. Well, there you go. Must be a good guy then.
Yes, he is.
Well, how has the move geographically affected Vicki Emerson musically? Because, you know, I remember you and I talking about how much you enjoyed New York because it was, you know, it was New York. It's where things happen. Although Minneapolis isn't a slouch when it comes to music either.
No, it's not. And I would say that Minneapolis, you know, far exceeds whatever was going on in San Francisco. Their scene is a little not as vibrant as the other, you know, as Minneapolis or New York. I didn't really do many shows there. Luckily, I was more focused on writing during that time. I wouldn't say my music has necessarily changed. I mean, I would say the new album sounds different than Long Ride, which is okay, and it's good to do something different. I would say with Dust and Echoes, it leans a little bit more towards a melancholy, sometimes more themes about healing, letting go, family, and love.
You know, a lot of times when someone finds themselves in a different room other than they're used to as far as where they do their writing, things change. Although I've heard people say that they write some of their best stuff when they're on the road sitting in a hotel room.
That's absolutely true. I think being out of your comfort zone and keeping change in your life I think for as a songwriter, it's a valuable thing. It makes you uncomfortable, and sometimes things that make you uncomfortable make you delve a little deeper.
In one of your previous sentences, you used the term dust and echoes, and I'm sure some people were saying, what was that? What was people that haven't seen your CD? That is the name of your newest CD.
Yes.
CDs often take on, you know, the same chapter-like feel of an author recounting a progression of his or her life. You did just moments ago say that this was a little bit more introspective and more about letting go and love. Tell me where this newest CD takes us, and more importantly, where it takes you.
Where it took me to write it, I think having the birth of my daughter was, you know, it's such an amazing experience, but it also made me really reevaluate the relationships that I had. And, you know, we hurt people hurt us, and I think that I had a lot of time to think about the way I had treated people and the way I want to treat people and how I want to be as a mother and as a wife. I mean, those are really deep thoughts and all that, but I think that's where I started, you know, with this album, and then the songs came from there.
That's the voice of Vicki Emerson, West Wisconsin native, singer-songwriter. We've talked to her several times on Spectrum West, and she has a new CD out. It's called Dust and Echoes. Actually, if you say it fast, it sounds like a guy's name, Dust and Echoes. Which, yeah, so you have to say it slowly so that people don't think you're talking about an individual, right?
Sure.
Okay. The thing about becoming a parent is that, you know, your life changes. You do things more seriously sometimes, and sometimes it's a lot more fun than it ever was. I sense that maybe Vicki Emerson has a little bit more feeling going on. Do you find more feeling when you're doing what you do, which is write the songs? Because, you know, parenthood, it changes things.
It does. It definitely changes things. For, you know, I think a good example on the album is Shine. I wrote that about my daughter, you know, on her first birthday. And so it's a very, you know, a very tender song. And also, I think in the vocal delivery, I really did my best to take care of the vocal and be very tender with it, you know, where it wants to draw you in and have you listen to the lyrics and tell you the story.
Tender's a good word. And you know what? I have all the CDs that you've put out since you and I got to know each other, and this, from what I've heard, is my favorite so far.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled to hear that.
Let's go to that CD. I have it in front of me. Give me a song that you and I should listen to about a minute of. We'll talk about that song, and then we'll fit it into the whole picture.
Okay. I would say suggest Tennessee.
Tennessee?
Number two.
Should I ask you now, or should I wait till after we listen to a minute of it? Nah, let's listen to a minute of it. Okay. All right, here we go. Listened a little bit more than a minute there, but I had to let the chorus go through to get a good feeling for it. That's a great song. It's a neat sound to it. So, why would Vicki Emerson write about Tennessee?
Right, I know. Well, it's not about Tennessee.
It isn't.
No, sadly, no.
You could have fooled me.
Yeah, you know, this was an interesting song. It was kind of put together in two parts. The first thing that happened is I was staying in my mother-in-law's, which is over kind of in the Stillwater area, and this was a few years ago, mm-hmm. before babies and everything, and I was staying there. I was probably doing some shows in the area, and I woke up. When I woke up at their home, there was a huge black crow sitting outside my window, which is an incredibly unsettling thing, and it was looking at me, and I thought, oh, my goodness. And then, you know, later in the week, I had talked to a young girl who was just full of potential, and I kind of saw some of the things that I was going through at her age. And she was just so passionate about going to college where her boyfriend was going at age 18 and how they were going to get married and all this stuff. And I tried to tell her, you know, things don't always work out. She did not want to hear that. And as I flew home, kept thinking about the crow and also about how your first love just doesn't always work out, but it's up to you to go through that and discover that. So that's where that song came from.
Yeah, some of the titles on the CD are, there's one called Reverie, that's a slow song. Here/Stay, that's kind of cool. I like the slash in there. You don't see a lot of song titles with slash
in
it.
That's the love song. The love song for the hamster. He's got to get one. You know?
Ah, okay. All right. Good. Well, good that you got in there. At least it wasn't the Great Divide. That's
exactly.
If you said, honey, here's a song I wrote for you. It's called The Great Divide. You have a couple CD release appearances close to our houses.
Very excited to go back to Wide Spot. If people have not been there, you need to go. It is awesome to have this in Wisconsin. It's a beautiful theater in Stockholm, Old Opera House. It's the coolest place to listen to music. Mm-hmm. And that's on January 19th. Then I'll be at the Dakota, which is a pretty awesome jazz club in Minneapolis, on the 25th with the full band.
Keep us in your loop.
Oh, I will. Thank you so much for having me back on.
You know, she's touring with the idea of doing an acoustic holiday album. That might be next. We'll see. Vicki Emerson, always fun to talk with. Equally enjoyable to hear her sing. The CD is Dust and Echoes. She's at the Wide Spot in Stockholm next Saturday the 19th. Check it all out at VickiEmerson.com. Here's a little more of her music.
There is dust rising up, and I know we need the rain, but this time, it's not enough for you to promise things will change. Hey.
Vicki Emerson. The CD is Dust and Echoes. That song is called Washington Street. That's kind of cool. That's good stuff. And she's, as I said, always fun to talk with. Here's a Spectrum memo. There's a student art exhibit up at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts through the month of January. Okay. Well, that's the end of the month, yes. Next Saturday, the 19th, it's an afternoon writer's workshop, an evening of storytelling featuring Jerry Apps, a celebrated Wisconsin author, of course. Starting time 7:30 at the center in Amory. Information at 268-6811. 20 minutes after 5 on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org. Support also comes from Festival Foods, dedicated to making every business decision based on the premise of bringing customers back. More about Festival Foods' boomerang theory at festivalfoods.com.
Another Spectrum Memo today. Tomorrow, the Saturday Artist Talk Series continues at the Abode Gallery in Stockholm, featuring creative ceramicist Gib Krohn from Maiden Rock. Admission is free. They all start at 2:30 p.m. What else is going on? This month, the Artsy Gallery in Amory features the work of jeweler Edna Grotjan Early and painter Paul Oman. I hope I don't butcher those pronunciations. Really, I do. There's also a display of quilts by members of the Apple River Quilt Guild. The opening reception is going on right now, today, until 8 o'clock. Artsygallery.org is where you get more information. Spectrum West, thanks for being with us today, folks. Jim Oliver is already hitting his stride in the new year, uncovering and sharing all kinds of information from the world of theater and literature here on Spectrum West. Here's today's deposit.
The Eau Claire Children's Theater's 16th Annual Murder Mystery Dinner Theater production of Murder at the Class Reunion opens next Friday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Back to talk to us is the founder and executive director of the Children's Theater, Wayne Merrick. Well, Wayne, we certainly appreciate your coming in. We know there's always something going on at the Children's Theater. How did the annual Mystery Dinner Theater get started?
Yeah, way back when, I guess, now it seems. We were looking for an interactive event, dinner event, something to showcase our adult performers. And that kind of led us to the creation of these Murder Mystery Dinner Theater events. This particular script, Murder at the Class Reunion, is actually the first script that we had done, and we actually commissioned a playwright out in New York to write the script for us. So we own the script. Nobody else would have done this script. And we've done it maybe 3-4 times over the history of the event. It's definitely an adult's night out, couple's night out. We see a lot of people using it now for their holiday parties, gathering their friends together, office coworkers, things like that. So it is dinner and a show, and that's kind of why we started doing it. It gets to feature our adult non-singing actors. We seem to do a lot of musicals during the year, so these are, you know, it's a good show for the people who don't feel like they can sing. And it's also just kind of a different event with the dinner and the show and the interaction. There's always a different theme to the show as well.
Well, this is an interactive play, so how does that work?
Sure. Unlike some other shows, you know, there will be some people that maybe are pegged in the audience to be pulled up on stage or whatever, not that often. So that's why some people get a little nervous when it's interactive. But the more important interactive part of it is that the cast members mingle with the audience. They are interacting. They're dropping clues. This particular show has multiple endings, so the audience actually votes and decides who the murderer is at the end. So they do have to, you know, do some questioning of the suspects. They get a chance to vote on who did it, and it changes the ending each night.
Well, tell us what the story's about.
Every year we do these. It has a different theme. So we've had things like a family reunion, a wedding, a funeral, anything that would make people come to an event or to a gathering. So this year is Murder at the Class Reunion. So when you're coming, you'll be coming to the class of 1983's 30-year class reunion. Perfect opportunity to bust out the leg warmers and the big hair and the neon suspenders, whatever you wore in the 80s. Not everybody will dress up, but some people will. So you'll be coming to the reunion, and as everybody knows, there's certainly lots of things that happen in high school that maybe come back to haunt you, or people that hold grudges. And of course, as with all these shows, there is a murder that takes place at some point in the evening. It's usually the character that everybody hates anyhow, but there is a murder, and then from there, you know, the audience has to help the cast solve the murder mystery.
So you never know from one performance to the next.
Nope, it'll change every night, so the actors have to be on their toes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, tell us a little bit about the characters in the play and then the actors who
sure.
are there to play.
Most of these, and this one is very typical, they have very stereotypical stock types of characters. So for this one, you have the nerdy class secretary and the nerdy AV club guy, the high school jock who now has become the principal, the busybody, you know, head cheerleader type. You've got the star that's coming back for the reunion. That's kind of why they're honoring her at this event. She went away and became a big Broadway star. Happens to be the character everybody hates, and, you know, they'd like to bump her off. But so you have those kind of stock characters in all of these types of shows. So, but this one, I would imagine most people will recognize somebody up on that stage from their own classmates.
Mm-hmm. So who are the actors who are performing?
Most of them have been in a number of our shows, either musicals or non-musicals. Alicia Klein, John Leonowskis. Judy Willink has been in a number of these, Robin Michelson. Some of them have been in multiple of these murder mystery dinner theaters, and some of them have actually been in this particular script at different times as we've done it.
You know, I take this a little bit personally because you talked about the nerdy AV guy.
Yes.
I was an AV guy in high school.
Well, I can't speak to if you fit that stereotype, but at least that's how this actor is playing the role.
Okay. Well, there are some kind of special ticket arrangements that people should be aware of when you talk about that.
Right. This is not your typical, you know, call the day before or just stop in the night of the show, because with dinner, we have to give the caterer a heads up on the head count. So the deadline for each weekend of the show, which is the 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th, is the Tuesday of that week. Mm-hmm. So if people wanted to go on the 18th or 19th, they'd have to reserve by the 15th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He is Wayne Merrick, who is director of the Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Murder at the Class Reunion. Well, as I indicated at the beginning, there's always something going on at the Children's Theater. Should I ask what's going on right now? There's a show going on now, is there?
Right. We're actually in the last weekend of There's a Boy in the Girl's Bathroom, mm-hmm. which is a Louis Sachar novel, pretty popular children's book, kind of plays to that upper elementary, middle school age audience. Mm-hmm. So pretty popular book. This is the last weekend for that. And then we roll right into The Secret Garden, which is our next big musical that's in rehearsal, and that opens at the State beginning of February.
Well, there's some other things going on as well. The Kids Cabaret auditions are coming up later this month.
The 22nd. The Kids Cabaret was designed as another way to showcase, obviously, young performers in Eau Claire. I would call it a musical talent show. Young people audition ages 14 and under to be one of the spotlight acts in the show. They can do solos, duets, group numbers, things like that, but it is all vocal, so you won't see any baton twirling or anything like that. And then it also features show choirs from South Middle School, Altoona Middle School. Our Star Quest winners from this last year come back to MC and then also perform. So it's a really nice way to showcase some of the young, really quite amazing young talent in the Chippewa Valley.
I have to throw this in. In my earlier life as a newspaper man, I had the opportunity to cover a Miss Minnesota pageant in a couple of years, and I always remember there was a talent portion.
Yes.
And I always thought that there was one area where that was kind of a problem sometimes, and the people who didn't have any talent then gave a dramatic reading. I gather there's no dramatic readings.
No dramatic readings, thankfully.
Okay,
it's all music.
Okay, fine. Then there is a new playwrights competition.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yep. The information has been out since, we usually get that out in the fall because just to give those writers time to start thinking. Mm-hmm. But as most people procrastinate, we don't ever see the entries come in until the week of the deadline or the day of or midnight of the deadline, as long as they come in. But this was actually started a number of years ago as the Young Playwrights competition, and it had two categories, a middle school category and a high school category. And then we had a lot of requests from adult playwrights as well, wondering, you know, if we would want to add that as a category. So we changed the name to the New Playwrights Competition. And it's three categories, a middle school, high school, and adult category, 10 to 12 pages written, 10-minute playing time. The submission deadline is Friday, February 22nd. Then the plays are judged. We have auditions for the winning shows, and then they are produced. And that is part of their winning, or the prize is a little cash prize, and then actually to get their play produced. Mm-hmm. So the playwrights work with myself and our staff to produce the play. They get to help with the casting. They're there for rewrites if we need to rewrite anything, or if they want to change anything. They help with the costuming, pretty much, you know, have a say in producing their play.
Talk about the judging of the entries. Who are the judges, not specifically by name?
Sure. Yep. We always pull in three judges, and it's usually either English or theater instructors or directors from the area. We pick two in each category to produce.
Well, we've been visiting with Wayne Merrick, who is director of the Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Murder at the Class Reunion. The show opens next Friday and will play Saturday and the following Friday and Saturday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Reservations for each show must be made the week before each performance. Contact the Children's Theater for ticket information. Wayne Merrick, always a pleasure to have you in. Thanks for coming by again.
Thank you.
It's 5:30, and this is Spectrum West. Spectrum Memos this afternoon. This doesn't necessarily have to do with the arts, culture, and humanities, but I wanted to let you know that the annual Pancake Feed is going to be held in the Eau Claire North Commons tomorrow, 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. The breakfast includes pancakes, sausage, milk, coffee, and orange juice. They're going to have a bake sale during these same hours. And proceeds go to help athletes at North compete at the state level and the nationals. Okay? It's going to be held in Aurora, Colorado. It's a good deal. Only $5 for adults, 12 years and under, only $3. That's tomorrow, 7 a.m., Eau Claire North, Commons. Getting hungry already. At the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls, the gallery features the work of Al Harper, who sculpts in cottonwood bark, and Gary McMahon, whose medium is titanium. Tomorrow, again, we have them coming up later in the show, 7:30 p.m. here, the Barnyard Banshees perform their traditional Irish fare, and there's room to dance. Then next Sunday, the 20th, see the Stoughton Norwegian Dancers at 2 p.m. Get all the information and details at the Heidi at 726-9000. That's, of course, area code 715-726-9000. And go to cvca.net. Well, the January 11th version of Western Wisconsin's Arts, Culture, and Humanities audio magazine Spectrum West continues. And as is the case almost every time we turn around, there's a CD or a book coming from the talent of someone in our midst. And this segment is about a book and its author, a gentleman who has written several books on what he's very good at and talks about for a living, children's literature and its place in educational studies at UW-Eau Claire. Rob Reed was a very popular children's librarian at the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire, and now, instead of acting out books for young people on a daily basis, he's producing literature that helps others excel at the craft. His newest is called Silly Books to Read Aloud. This is about the way many people were introduced to Rob Reed, I think, as kids or parents of kids when you performed, quote-unquote, at the Eau Claire Library, I remember. Were you head of the children's library?
I was just one of the two.
Librarians?
Yeah. I was the funny one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than all the research that must have gone into this book, I'm thinking it must have just flowed off your fingertips.
It was a fun project. It was a fun project. Silly Books to Read Aloud. A lot of it is gleaned from my previous books, Reed's Read Alouds, Reed's Read Alouds 2, Something Funny Happened at the Library, and What's Black and White and Read All Over, which are my publisher, ALA Editions. They are marketed for institutions, the libraries and schools. And they started a new imprint called Huron Street Press. So basically, they'll have lower priced books to sell to the general public. So a lot of what I took have in Silly Books to Read Aloud is taken from the other books. It's updated. It has books published in 2012 even. Mm-hmm. And basically, I maintain that these are the funniest books on the market. That includes picture books, chapter books for elementary and middle school kids, poetry collections, easy readers, and even graphic novels. And I maintain you can read a graphic novel to a kid. You just be sure to include all the word balloons and sound effects and have fun.
And funny because it's a wonderful way to get kids to think that reading is enjoyable?
Well, that was my hook as a librarian. I was able to recognize that humor was the hook, like you said. Mm-hmm. And if you can make them laugh, you can associate fun with the library and reading, then the job is a lot easier. And with the new book, it's basically a guide for parents to say, okay, I'm going to read you something funny today. And the kids will certainly appreciate that.
Well, Rob Reed, you're described as an acclaimed children's book authority.
Okay.
So I had to look up. I know what acclaimed means. I went to the thesaurus. Much admired, commended, celebrated, applauded, praised, and admired. You know what? I think acclaimed is a goal all by itself. Congratulations on all the acclamation.
Thank you.
I kid you, though. It is earned and comes after years of hard but enjoyable work. So, is reading taught the way it was taught when I was a kid?
Oh, definitely not.
Which was just after Gutenberg invented the printing press.
Yeah, right. No. You and I were both grew up with Dick and Jane books.
Yes, we did.
And Dr. Seuss was on record as saying, I'm going to kill Dick and Jane. And he did that with the Cat in the Hat book. Basically turned that dull, dry, phonetic approach into something fun.
I had fun with Dick and Jane.
Did you really?
I was one of the rare guys. I think I looked. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, they republished them, so you can go out and buy one and have a nostalgic heyday.
They were idols of mine. What are you talking about?
No, the children's book market is certainly a lot broader than it used to be. Mm-hmm. Captain Underpants, for example, would never have been published when you and I were kids because of the potty humor. And I do show in my book the different styles of humor and mm-hmm. recognize that not every type of humor is for everybody. So some people will relish in Captain Underpants with its potty humor, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and some people will say, oh, I'm reading this. It says this about Captain Underpants. I'm going to steer away from it.
Yeah.
There's gentle humor. There's satire. There's belly laughs. There's a lot of pun-filled books, a lot of wordplay books mm-hmm. listed in there, too. I think kids of all interests and levels will get into it.
Dick and Jane didn't go potty.
They did not, no.
No.
No. And they weren't funny either.
Had they gone potty, they would have been funny, I think. We're talking with Rob Reed, Senior Lecturer, Education Studies, UW-Eau Claire, specifically today about his new book, Silly Books to Read Aloud. There's a wonderful introduction to the book in which you talk about reading to your kids. One marathon in which you and your son finished a Harry Potter book late at night. Most equate reading short little golden books, but you're like the chapter a day guys on WPR. You practice that with your kids. Is that something that you would say is a good idea for
people? Definitely, definitely, yes. Children are never too young to read aloud. You know, even infants that aren't speaking yet, you can read to the kids. There's certainly a lot of early childhood books that are out there. Continue reading. I'm a devotee of Jim Trelease. I saw Jim Trelease, who's the author of the Read Aloud Handbook, speak early in my career. He was a big influence, and he said, keep reading to them when they even read themselves. Mm. Statistics show that the literacy rates go up. It's better for the individuals. It's better for the community. It's better for the country to have people well-versed in literature. And read alouds is just another way to do that. I think that's one reason why audiobooks are so popular right now, too, is mm-hmm. basically that, you know, somebody's reading a book to you.
Now, you just said kids are never too young, but they're also never too old.
Exactly, exactly. And Jim Trelease gave a wonderful kind of an eye-opening thing for me relating a story about reading to his teenage son. And I thought, yes. And so I ask my students now who are going to teach high school, how many are going to read to your class? Kind of challenge them to let them mm-hmm. know that, yes, go ahead and read to them. The kids really do enjoy it.
Is there research out there that backs up the value of reading aloud to young
yes,
people?
Yes, and you can find that in Jim Trelease's Read Aloud Handbook also, yes. And there's still copies of it available at the libraries. The latest edition is still available for purchase, and he does have a website. You know, especially for teachers and librarians that need to show evidence why they exist and what good they are in the community, mm-hmm. There's wonderful statistics.
I have grandchildren who, as very young kids, were read aloud to every night. It was religious. And I say this proudly, they are all very good students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's related. It's related to the reading, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that some of those studies will show the connection there, too.
I know you and I have talked.
It's a nurturing atmosphere.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I know you and I have talked about takes me something very interesting to have me dive in and go cover to cover. So maybe that's because, first of all, Dick and Jane.
That could be. If you want, I can come over tonight and read a passage to you. Yeah, I can read a funny book to you.
Make it cuddle?
Well, I'll sit in a chair. And
yeah, okay. Well, then where did the transition happen to you? Because you were a Dick and Jane guy just like me. Where did you suddenly discover that reading could be just a lot of fun?
I think once I got into high school, I started getting pointed in the direction of some really good writers. Kurt Vonnegut. Then I decided at that point I should, you know, probably be an English major in college, and so found a lot of good writing from there. And I was going to say, you know, I started with reading comic books and Mad Magazine and Hardy Boys exclusive as a kid.
There you go.
Those are good, too. They can kind of lead to the Shakespeare and the Hawthorne. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. With the kids, it came with the birth of my oldest daughter, Laura. Mm. I was in grad school getting my master's in library science, and she was born, and it was kind of a moment where I said, you know, I like children's stuff. I like the children's aspect of library services as opposed to going in the administration route, which I had been planning to do. Having fun with doing the storytelling and the reading and selecting children's books. And I think at that point I discovered how rich the field is in children's literature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a part in the book that I was reading where someone said they approached another person. They wanted advice because they said, my kids don't like the books I'm picking. And then the word poetry came up.
A lot of times my college students who are volunteering with elementary age kids, Reading Partners Program is one of them. They'll come to me and say, okay, I've tried this and this with the kids. They don't like it. And so I say, how about poetry? Have you tried poetry with them too? And there's certainly more out there than Shel Silverstein, which most people equate children's poetry. Shel's a great place to start. But I also, in my book, have a lot of other humorous poets to take a look at.
Reading aloud is another form of acting. It's just that you don't have to memorize the script.
And you know, I do have a theater background too with the English in college and I think that was just kind of a natural transformation.
Yeah.
Yes, with reading aloud, you can play around with it as much as you want, with the vocalizations, play around with the characters, the dialogue. A lot of the experts, the actors that get hired for the books on tape, certainly do that.
Adds a whole new dimension to how you're viewed as a parent.
I think so, yeah.
I think so, too. Well, you have a book in front of you, and I didn't plan on this, but thanks for bringing it along. Pick out a page or something and give us an example of how we should read aloud to our
kids. Sure. This is a picture book called I Lost My Bear by Jules Pfeiffer, and Jules Pfeiffer was kind enough to give a positive quote about my book on the back of my book there. Jules Pfeiffer, the illustrator of the Phantom Toe Booth classic book, and I Lost My Bear is a little girl who has lost her bear, and she's really upset, and she throws a fit, and she goes, oh my gosh, I forgot all about my bear. I cried because I was ashamed. I forgot my bear. I cried to my mother. I couldn't find her because you wouldn't help me. And the next page, you see the teddy bear in her bed.
Yeah.
And the parents are looking, and she goes, Bearsy. Fine conclusion.
Wow, and it was written that way.
There's a lot of C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C-C- do that. You just follow the author's words.
Why is it whenever I'm preparing for a conversation with Rob Reed that the topics and questions are easy to find and I have way, way, way too much? I guess maybe I'm just a big kid at heart.
I think so. That's why
I know someone else who might be, too.
I've been accused of that a few times, yeah. But
I'm actually proud of that.
I found my niche, yeah. I think it was a good move for me to work with kids.
Now, there's an understatement, huh? Some people just find what they were meant to do. Others keep searching and actually should keep searching because that's what life is all about, being happy and who you are, right? Time is 5:43. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. I appreciate your being with us today.
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Audi, featuring the restyled 2013 Audi A4. Equipped with Audi Connect, online Google enhanced navigation, access to local information, and Wi-Fi. KenVance.com.
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. The community arts production of King Arthur will play next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 18th to the 20th, at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Missoula Children's Theater production of The Tortoise Versus the Hare will be presented Saturday by the Flambeau Valley Artists Association at the Ladysmith High School Auditorium, and also by the Neillsville Area Players at the Neillsville High School Auditorium. Both shows are on Saturday. There's A Boy in the Girls' Bathroom, a production of the Eau Claire Children's Theater, plays tonight, Saturday and Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Children's Theater is 15th annual Mystery Dinner Theater production of Murder at the Class Reunion, opens next Friday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Rainmaker opens tonight and plays Fridays and Saturdays in the Black Box Theater of the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The play runs through January 27th. And Mr. Christmas plays tonight, Saturday, and closes on Sunday at the Fannie Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild is holding auditions for the Dixie Swim Club at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Little Theater in Eau Claire. The production will open on March the 7th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Spectrum Memo, tickets now on sale for Cabaret 35 School Day at UW Eau Claire. Performances are January 17th through 19th and 24th through 26th. Most are evening performances with matinees scheduled for January 19th and 26th. The show has supported music scholarships since 1978.
Wow.
Well, they're called the Barnyard Banshees. When you look closer, you recognize the individuals as each a strong instrumentalist and capable vocalist. The Langby family, consisting of Dean, Leah, Olivia, and Alice, plus friend Ralph Suchting, who lives nearby. He plays guitar and sings when he's asked to. Tomorrow night, they're at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, and the patriarch of the clan was good enough to stop by for a conversation. I have to tell you that it sticks out like it should when you want people to notice, so I don't want to waste any time dancing around the issue, so what's up with the name?
The Banshees certainly is the quintessential Irish, right?
I went literally read up on Banshees, and I said, okay, so why do these guys want to be called Banshees?
Yeah, well, you know, the band formed when our kids were young, and they really liked the name, and Barnyard because we live in the country, and we have a barnyard, and it's a band that's made up mainly of she's, I think. There's three women and two guys.
Yeah, Banshee was something when I read about the definition that I don't really want to run into.
Exactly. I don't either.
So we should forget the literal and mythical definition and concentrate on the barnyard part.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I have to tell you that your family reminds me of the one in which I grew up.
Uh-huh.
We all played an instrument. We sang together and harmonized when we did. We attended lots of concerts, professional and those containing family members.
Yeah.
The difference is that we only did it for fun and you do it to entertain others. So tell me how far back the Langby musical roots go.
Certainly my own personal roots is very much like yours. My parents were both musicians. My mom was a violinist in the Rochester Symphony. My dad was a choral
director. Minnesota or New York?
Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah. He was a choral director and taught general music. So certainly I had that. I played cello the whole time I was growing up. Then my wife, Leah, her parents weren't musical, although they did play and sing a lot. And she was a flute player and oboe player. So when we got together, at that time I wasn't playing the cello. I had arthritis in my 20s, and so I couldn't play the cello. And so I was kind of looking for some other thing to do. So I took up the fiddle, started playing that, and liked the Irish music. And my wife liked that too, and we moved to Sturgeon Bay. Then we met up with some people who played Irish music. And so we all started playing a whole bunch there and formed a group called Bubble and Squeak.
You must have been big time, because I've heard that name before.
Well, you know, I think there might be a second Bubble and Squeak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're the lowly ones.
You're the lesser.
The lesser, yeah.
Smaller bubble.
Smaller bubble, more squeaking. Yeah, and so what's funny is when we were recording a CD, Leah was pregnant with Olivia.
Oh, wow.
And we would be recording all of these tunes, which would always quiet Olivia down. And then after she was born, and she would just be inconsolable, we would rush over and get the CD out, and we would start the very first track of the CD. And then that little baby would stop crying and just kind of look around like she'd heard that somewhere before.
Wow.
So she has been around Irish music since before she was born. And I suppose you could say the same for Alice, too, which is kind of interesting.
So now the family band, how long? We know that Olivia was subjected to music very, very, very early.
Yeah.
When did you decide you could do this?
Well, I was teaching Olivia violin in Suzuki style when she was five. And by about seven, she was really liking the jigs and reels that I was playing.
Oh, neat.
As a cellist, at this time I was playing cello, and I you know, I was a gigging cellist, so I didn't practice a whole lot at home. But I love to play the fiddle. So she wanted to play all the stuff I was playing. And so, you know, you have to teach her these things. So I taught her these things. She picked them up so fast, and then I realized that it wasn't all that challenging to play these because my seven-year-old was beating me on it. And so, you know, then we would play together. And then I was also playing with Ralph at the time. So Ralph would come over and play with us, and then Leah would get out her flutes, and then that just left Alice out of the picture. And then Alice was playing piano a little bit. And then we gave her a boron, that Irish drum, the round drum.
Yeah, yeah.
And she also plays violin, too. And then she picked up singing. So I guess it's been maybe 5 or 6 years that we've been playing together.
We're talking with Dean Langby. The Barnyard Banshees is their family plus one group. They're playing tomorrow night at the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls. That begins at 7:30. The group consists of Dean on fiddle and cello, Olivia, his daughter, on fiddle and vocals, another daughter, Alice, on baron, vocals, and fiddle, Leah, his wife, on flute and whistle, and Ralph Suchting plays the guitar. Well, you know, you must have done a wonderful job teaching Olivia, because she has been on this show. She has been a prize winner. Refresh me on what she accomplished and why she would have been here.
Yeah, she won a concerto competition Youth Symphony as an eighth grader. And she was always a go-getter on the violin. A lot of stuff came very naturally to her. And I was teaching her up through the third or fourth book of Suzuki, and at that point she was getting things faster than I was and just went crazy on it.
Now, the stuff you play is described as jigs and reels and beautiful songs and lyrical, slower tunes. Is it original stuff? Is it traditional stuff? A combination? What?
It's all traditional stuff. Some of it is from bands of current bands. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's, in the common domain. And, you know, these are just jigs and reels people have been playing for 100 years. The dance tunes are pretty standard in their construction. Mm-hmm. We play things like A Shokin Farewell, which is, I think, Jay Ungar wrote that. And a few other tunes that we just, you know, we find something in the library, and we like a tune, and then we play it. Of course, we make our own arrangements of it, and so there is a little originality in that. But for the most part, it's right off the page.
St. Patrick's Day must be big for you guys. Must have fun.
Yeah, we do have fun, yeah.
You're wearing green. You have a green shirt on, I see, underneath that
I do.
Sweater. So that's maybe coincidence. Is Langby Irish?
No, it's a made-up name. It's a hybrid. I was a Nasby growing up, and my wife was a Langworthy.
Ah.
So we just took a syllable out of each name.
O. Langby.
There you go. My dad actually gave me a T-shirt that said O. Langby on it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Now, you recorded a CD last year as a group. What's on that CD?
Mainly our favorites.
And the stuff you were best at, I'll bet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, when you
That's always smart on a CD.
Yeah. You have a band and, you know, two are teenagers and one has a full-time job.
Sure.
You don't want to practice a whole lot.
No.
It's not good for the family dynamics. Yeah, we picked the stuff we were good at. We did A Shokin Farewell, which is a fun one. We did a few other hot fiddle tunes, Olivia and I did, and Alice sings a lot on it.
Does it have a title, the CD?
Oh, not really.
Just the Barnyard Banshees. Okay.
Yeah.
Good photograph on it?
We had a friend who did some clip art for it.
Ah.
And it was a kind of a mythical leprechaun-y kind of creature.
Okay.
Going with the banshee theme.
Neat. Mm-hmm. I saw in a release from the Heide Center that they're going to make room for dancing, and I would guess that you guys feed off it when people get out in front of you and dance.
Yes, we love having people dance, especially for the waltzes. It's nice to have people waltz around.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing music since I was 10 and professionally since I was 14. And I have to say the most rewarding things I've ever done is playing for dances.
Mm-hmm.
I do that in Menominee maybe 4 or 5 times a year. I play for a contra dance.
Oh.
And it's very, very nice. I think one of the great ironies is that I get lots of money for playing the 8 notes of Pachelbel's Canon over and over again, and I get nothing at all for playing dances,
mm-hmm.
and yet the dances are so much more rewarding.
Yeah.
So we love the dancers.
And you don't have to jump out and do any sort of, you know, Irish...
Well, it's kind of
Lord
step
of the
dancing.
Dance, the, yeah, okay.
None of that.
You can just hop around if you want.
Right, which is what I do.
And I'm guessing you play hop-around music.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, sounds like a neat show tomorrow night. Again, it's at the Heide Center, 7:30, the Barnyard Banshees. Dean Langby, thanks for, as the patriarch of the family and I guess leader of the group probably, thanks for being with us here on Spectrum West, and keep in touch with us.
You're welcome.
The Barnyard Banshees, as they are and will be tomorrow evening, 7:30 at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls. Phone number there for tickets is 726-9000. CVCA.net is the website. Good luck to a nice group and a very nice group of people as well. A Spectrum Memo, the annual juried art show, Arts West 34, is coming to the Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. The exhibit will be open from February 24th through April 5th. Entries have been submitted. Judging is going on as we speak. A discussion series featuring poems of Nobel Prize winner Tomas Tranströmer will be presented at the library on Wednesdays, January 16th and 23rd. Retired Professor Warren Lang leads the discussions, which begin at 10:15 a.m. At the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, the Janet Carson Gallery features the works of Kerry Tarr, Mike Tarr, and David Brock. Now through the 31st, there's an artist reception next Thursday, the 17th, at 6 p.m. Thursday, it's the always popular John Mueller's Winter Dance Party, 7:30 p.m., the authentic tribute show of the Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and Big Bopper final tour. And then next Saturday, it's a tribute to the Bee Gees. Staying Alive at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Info about all events at eauclairearts.com. Next Sunday at 1 p.m., the Haas Fine Arts Center at UW-Eau Claire hosts the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony and the finals of the annual concerto competition. Last Friday evening, the Barneys were awarded at the Red Barn Theater as they recognize actors, actresses, and volunteers for their summer performances and assistance. Congratulations to Bill Kozlowski, Connie Olson, Sherry Hefty, Mark Nemo, Sue Sather Larson, there we go, Jackson Liddle, Terry Wiesner, and Boyd Stearns, plus Megan Wilger and Shelby Golden, who are scholarship recipients. I'm sure Jim Oliver will have all the exciting seasonal Red Barn info as it becomes available here on Spectrum West. And the Menominee Singers will hold auditions for all sections Wednesday and Thursday evenings of the next 2 weeks, the 16th and 17th, and the 23rd and 24th, at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts. Information at anoldsweetsong@hotmail.com. That's an email address, of course. And via phone at 715-505-3525. Well, that wraps it up for today on Spectrum West. Al Ross here, and I hope you have a nice weekend. Go Packers, and we'll see you again next Friday at 5 for more of Spectrum West. See ya.
Step on out of that ice shanty and warm up with hot coffee, fresh donuts, and some belly laughs at a live broadcast of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? I'm Sarah Nix, inviting you to join Michael and the gang at Monona Terrace this week. Our guest is journalist and The Outpost author Jake Tapper. Tickets are on sale now. For more information and a chance to win tickets, click on WPR.org/Madison.